eager to efficient. The editor was walking to work from his home near the mountain when suddenly he heard a strange echo all around. As he stopped and strained to listen, turning his ear to the wind in earnest, he wondered if there might be another earthquake. But the sound had stopped, and he thought perhaps it was his imagination. So he eased quietly along the path. Then the sound echoed around the mountain again, putting him off ease, but it seemed different this time. After a few more steps, he found a baby eagle with a deep voice, not yet old enough to fly. So he took it to his office and thought he would educate it. His job was to edit each edition of an animal magazine. He thought his editorial experiences with this magazine would be useful for teaching the bird to talk. However, the bird wasn't even interested in studying the economy, and only wanted toys. So the man found it necessary to ease off teaching the bird and help the cat feel more at ease. The cat thought this bird was not earnest enough in trying to learn, and that this affected the efficiency of their master's efforts. To prove that she was efficient in learning, the cat took up economics and learned quite a few economic terms. The result was so effective that her master, who was usually economical, bought her a new saucer as a reward. An editorial about this great achievement also appeared in the Animal magazine.
18 to Embassy. The 8th chairman of the Electronic Academy, an electrical engineer in his late 80s, was told that because of his age, at the next election, he would not be elected. The elderly man felt very hurt and angry. Since he was a foreign citizen, he emailed the ambassador of his country. In the email, he elaborated on his contribution to the elementary theories of electrons. He said that he had published his first book in electronics at the age of 18, and had devoted his life to the development of an elaborate theory. Now they are going to eliminate me from the competition. But they can't just elbow the elderly out like that. Their behavior has embarrassed me. I'm still fit and strong and walk with elastic steps. Work is the most important element in my life, and I'm sure I'll find myself useful elsewhere. His letter touched his fellow countrymen deeply, and he was invited to the embassy as an honored guest. The old man with elegant gray hair was welcomed by all the workers at the gate and was invited to go to the second floor where the ceremony was held. The old man asked, "Where is the elevator?" When he was told there wasn't one, the old man said, "But how can I get up the steps? Could someone please hold me by my elbows?"
Embrace, to, and force. Mr. Bunny regarded himself as an emperor, and his company as his empire. His employees often complained about his emotional outbursts, for he could thunder at someone for half an hour, and then give the same person a strong embrace within 5 minutes. Mr. Bunny, on the other hand, thought that expression of his emotions would enable him to become a friendlier employer. But whenever a problem emerged, he'd put the emphasis on who should be blamed and enforce everyone to work overtime. So every once in a while, some would leave his company because they couldn't endure this endless torture any longer. Those who stayed in employment feared that there would be no ending to this nightmare. When they had embraced and said goodbye to the 144th person who decided to leave, they felt they had to do something. One morning, Mr. Bunny found that nobody showed up at the office, and instead, they all rang in sick. As he'd never encountered emergencies like that before and didn't know what to do, he went home. His wife wasn't home, and there was a letter on the table, with her keys enclosed. She emphasized in her letter that she wouldn't come back again. Mr. Bunny emitted a shriek, tore the letter up, and thought about retirement.
Engage to episode. There was hardly another person who would engage himself in his enterprise as much as Robbie did. Robbie held a Ph.D. in engineering. One of the tasks he engaged in was to enlarge the capacity of engines used on aircrafts. It was an enormous challenge, but would enhance the speed of planes greatly. With enthusiasm, Robbie spent all his time on his work and had no time to entertain himself. He published a book entitled My Way to Success and became the envy of everybody. People who envied his achievements didn't know how much time he devoted to his work. In order to ensure success, he often forgot his environment and sometimes even his meals. There was an episode people like to talk about. Once, someone inquired how he could find so much time for his work. Robbie answered the inquiry by saying, "It's simple. There is no entry under entertainment in my dictionary. The last party I attended was a birthday party my parents held for me when I was 1 year old."
Equality to evolve. Helen believed that equality was essential in a marriage for women in this new era. According to an essay Helen read, scientists had even found evidence showing that women were better evolved than men. It took Helen a few years to find an equivalent person with whom to establish a relationship, because she evaluated men and found that most lacked potential and had not completed the process of evolution apart from standing erect. Perfect men were nowhere in evidence. Finally, Helen found her man who was equipped for marriage. On the eve of their wedding, they changed their estimate about married life. Helen found she had made an error when her man told her that as the woman in the family, she would be doing all of the everyday housework. "Women don't equal housemaids. Your equation is wrong," Helen shouted angrily. It was evident now that there was an evil side to this man, but she had planned to erect a dream home with him. They had evidently lost the basis for living together, so they started to divide their estate into halves through a legal establishment. But when it came to the bed, they both wanted it and refused to take an equivalent. So Helen took out a saw, made an estimate of the width, and cut the bed into halves. The man estimated that Helen was close to madness and was happy that he pulled out at the last minute.
Exaggerate to executive. Ever since he could remember, Dennis had liked exceedingly fast speed. He had dreamed of becoming a race car driver, but instead, he became a driving instructor. One day, a friend of his, who was an executive, asked Dennis to teach his executive assistant to drive, because without exception, she drove too slowly. On their first excursion, Dennis asked her to execute a right-hand turn into an exclusive part of town where there would be fewer drivers to take exception to her lack of speed. However, in her excess excitement, her foot slipped, and the car suddenly went in excess of the speed limit. Dennis wanted to exclude the possibility of a crash, or the police might exclaim that this excess speed was likely to cause one. But it also made him feel excited to exceed the speed limit, so he said nothing. There was then an exchange of words, in which Dennis became excited to excess when told that he was not exclusive in his liking for speed. He suggested that they should exchange places behind the wheel. Otherwise, he would have to exaggerate the risks of driving too fast.
Exert to explore. While on holiday, the White family hired a boat to explore the mountain on a nearby island. But they first had to exert a lot of pressure on the driver to get him to exert himself to fix the exhaust of the boat. Then, as they traveled along, they realized the driver had taken an experimental approach to fixing the boat, and that he was no expert in mechanical things. Although he was an expert card player when there were no tourists to exploit, the family decided they wouldn't let the driver spoil their exploits to the mountains, and that they would exhibit perfect manners in expectation that the driver might do the same. After half an hour, the father was ready to explode because expansion of a crack in the floor was letting water in, and he couldn't see an exit for the water. He told the driver that the expense of the trip wasn't worth the discomfort and told his family to exit when the boat slowed down. At the expense of their safety, the family jumped into the water because they could see the hole in the floor expand even more. The children thought the whole experience was such fun that they took a piece of the floor with them as an exhibit to prove the boat's existence to their friends.
explosion to eyesight. An extremist captured a plane and demanded the government stop exporting arms within 24 hours. Otherwise, all the passengers would be killed in an explosion. A newspaper exposed this explosive incident, which caused extreme anger among the public. As a result of the exposure, people demonstrated in the street, and the government was required to take extensive measures to stop the export of arms. In the meantime, a government official was sent to negotiate with the extremist and extend the deadline. The anger of the public reached its extreme when the extremist refused the extension offered. External pressure developed to such an extent that the government decided to send in a task force to rescue the passengers. It was an extraordinary task, as the extremist was dangerous in the extreme. The task force studied the exterior structure of the plane and approached it after dark. To prevent the extremists from going to extremes, they cut a hole in the exterior of the plane and went inside. The extremist wasn't expecting to see a group of soldiers appear from nowhere, and he was so surprised that to a certain extent he didn't resist much. After he was arrested, the police found that his eyesight was very poor and he could not light the explosives without help.
Fabric to fate. George was killed in an air crash. The fatal disaster happened when he was on his way to Africa, where he was to hold a fashion show to help children suffering from famine. His faithful admirers bid farewell to him by fastening his picture on a piece of fabric and hanging it from the top of the building. George had won his fame as a designer and was regarded as having a special faculty. People said that his fantastic designs were fascinating and that they expressed a new fantasy that wouldn't fade as time went by. Although George had always fancied he'd become a painter and had even entered an art school, fate had played a joke on him. He was colorblind and was laughed at as a failure. So George became a tailor, and his fancy enabled him to attract customers. His business fared very well, and his success was like a fairy tale. But his hard work was still the most important factor in his success. His fantasy and fancy designing provided the facility to enable people to buy the most fashionable clothes without paying the fare to fly to Paris or Milan. However, what people didn't know was that his bold designs and colors were due to his color blindness.
Fatigue to finally. Mrs. Smith was visiting her neighbor, Mrs. Jones. They talked about a movie based on a science fiction book by a female writer. It featured Arnold, who had a fearful look on his face. They then compared notes on what fertilizer could make the garden fertile for their plants. In their female talk, they also complained that their husbands had too much meat and not enough fiber in their diets. Mrs. Jones was about to put the filter in the coffee maker to filter some coffee when she received a fax from her husband. It called her his favorite and said, "Being with you makes every day feel like a festival to me." Mrs. Jones noticed Mrs. Smith's envious look and explained that her husband liked sending her messages. And, as he worked for the government would pay the fees for faxing them. "He even created a file for me so I can file them, because I like to keep my messages on file so I can go through them again." Then she went upstairs and changed, because her husband always wanted to see her fresh and clean when he came home. Mrs. Smith gave her a favorable look and said that her makeup made her features soft. The feedback from Mrs. Smith made her shine even more. Mrs. Smith said goodbye and hurried home, wondering whether what she learned from Mrs. Jones would be feasible for her. She then put on makeup and her favorite evening dress and sat there waiting for her husband. When Mr. Smith finally got home, he dropped with fatigue, gave her a fierce look, and said, "Are you going out? After a day of fatiguing work, I thought I was going to have my meal cooked for me. But look at you." Mrs. Smith realized that she had developed some faulty thinking.
Finance to fluid. The fire bell woke Lewis up. The light flashed, and then the power went out. Lewis felt rather tired because he'd worked till very late that night. The small company he worked for was suffering from some financial difficulty. The company's fluid assets couldn't finance the research of new products, so it might become bankrupt. As the director of the finance department, Lewis was trying to work out the problem. He rushed to the corridor and made his way down the stairs. Lewis was choking because of the smoke, so he fled into an apartment on the second floor to keep away from the smoke and flames. It was dark, and Lewis could barely see his way. He bumped into something that looked like a bag of flour. Lewis picked it up, holding it across his face to protect himself from the smoke, and jumped out of the window. As he landed, he could feel that his ankle wasn't flexible and thought he had hurt himself. Also, the flesh on his hands was slightly burned. A flock of people stood nearby, and Lewis could see a fleet of fire engines lined up in front of the building, with firemen using fluid out of the tap. A woman cried out with joy and flourished her arms when she saw Lewis and the parcel. She was so excited that her speech wasn't fluent. But Lewis found out that the parcel was her kitten. People flocked around Lewis, and he could see the flashes of cameras when it was revealed that the woman's husband was an important banker. The next day, the banker appeared at Lewis's office in the flesh and asked what he could do in return. Lewis felt like the lucky fisherman who caught the fish that could make his wishes come true.
Focus to formula. A foreigner arrived in London to attend a formal conference the following day. The conference dealt with the formation of a new committee, and she was one of the two candidates running for chairperson. But when she got up the next morning, she found from the weather forecast that there would be a heavy fog. She didn't want to be late because it was formatted that at the beginning of the meeting she was to speak to her following about her formula for use in management. But once in the street, she found that because the weather was so bad, taxis were forbidden to operate. Also, there weren't any local folks she could ask for directions. She became very worried and started to sweat on her forehead, because she knew that according to the format of the conference, if she did not arrive at the meeting in time, the other candidate, who was the former chairperson, would be elected automatically. Just then, she heard footsteps approaching. "Are you in trouble, young miss?" a man asked from behind. The former was taken aback as she was focusing on her problem. After she told him her problem, and the man suggested that he would take her there. "How can you see your way?" she asked. The man smiled and told her that he was blind. "But how could you tell I was a woman and young?" She saw the smile freeze on the man's face, and she added, "My father, a folk singer, told me not to believe strangers." She took the subway and arrived at the meeting in time to become the focus of attention when she entered the hall, because her competitor had forged a note saying that she had decided to pull out.
Fourth to Frost. After working at a small customs office for 40 years, Mark was going to retire within a fortnight. For the past 2 years, he had seen a young man crossing the frontier on a bike every day. Judging by the frequency of his trips, Mark knew he was doing some illegal business and checked him carefully each time. However, except for a framed postcard with its glass fragmented, keys, cigarettes, and so forth, Mark couldn't find anything that he was trying to carry across the border that looked like freight. As to the postcard, Mark overheard fragments of a conversation between a young man and his friend, and learned that he was nearly killed when his car lost control, as there was a heavy frost and the road was frosted. Fortunately, a wheel hit a big frog and the car stopped, so he bought a postcard with the animal on it and kept it with him for good luck. The officer decided to find out what the young man was freighting before he left his job. When the young man appeared the next day, Mark said, "I'm just curious, you see. I'll retire in another 14 days, and I'm going to work for a foundation in another city after that. So it's all right if you tell me the truth. I keep to my moral framework, and I won't tell. To be frank, what business do you do?" The young man looked at him for a fraction of a minute, then leaned forth. "The frames of the bike," he replied, "and the stamps on the postcard."
Frown to fuss. Many people attended Miss Goldman's funeral. Miss Goldman never married, but had a big family. She adopted many animals. She had devoted her life to help homeless animals and had set up a fund. At various functions, she had tried to convince people to fund her home for animals. Her efforts were fruitful, and now the home was functioning very well. She had treated her animals like a family. She would fry meat for them and let them wander around her house. She had furnished her house differently and had removed the furnace to allow more space for the animals. Her neighbors used to frown at that and make much fuss over the fact that her animals had dirtied their footpath, but she had paid no attention to their frowns. She couldn't afford to fuss over things like that, but she had made a fuss over her animals. She had also discouraged people from wearing fur coats, and furthermore, she had managed to start a campaign against the use of animal skin in clothes. This upset people in the fashion industry, so they tried to frustrate her plans. Miss Goodman had fulfilled her fundamental goal of providing a home for homeless animals, and had provided a good example of the fundamentals needed in this world.
Gallery 2 Genius. Ian is not a genius. In fact, he doesn't have the right gene to become one. Generally speaking, he's not even smart. His parents used to think the best thing that could happen to him would be to work in a gas station, or work as a gardener and grow garlic, as long as he didn't end up in jail like a gang of his friends did. Now his paintings are selling quite well in galleries, with millions of people gazing at them in admiration. All this is due to the generous help of a speculator who became very rich by selling gasoline. This man was having his car gassed up when he first noticed Ian, who was kneeling near the generator and drawing on the ground. He picked up some of Ian's drawings from the garbage can, and after a long gaze, decided to make an artist out of Ian. He provided Ian with all the gear and made sure Ian's friends didn't gang up on him. He geared Ian up for a new life among the rich and helped him to overcome his social gap and gear his paintings to meet the tastes of the upper class. He spent money worth millions of gallons of oil, but believed that Ian would be able to generate fame and money one day. He was right. Now, Ian is richer than the speculator and even has his own fashion brand.
Genuine to Glove. This is indeed a new era. Just take a quick glimpse at a computer, and you then have an idea of what's happening on the globe. The glory of modern science and technology is enough to make history look dull. We live in a world that's known as the global village, and have discovered things more frightening than germs, which are called computer viruses. We don't believe in ghosts, but address people like Bill Gates as giants. We no longer feel frustrated over geometry, as computers enable us to see all dimensions. We invent things to replace genuine nature and make the Earth a giant lab. We question the given information and always demand the story behind. On a glorious day, we might fancy putting on gloves and playing golf. We use signs on the screen to gesture when we talk to others without seeing them. Sending emails as a friendly gesture never fails to warm our hearts. We sometimes glimpse at the sky and decide we want to make Mars the next village, given that it's too crowded over here.
Glow to graduate. A graduate went to work for the state government. She had such graces that the governor fell immediately in love with her. Although she had just graduated, he insisted on her working as his assistant. He kept his eyes glued to her and grabbed every chance to get near her. He gave her compliments and expensive gifts, which she accepted with a graceful manner and thanked his goodness. There was a gradual change in their attitudes towards each other. One day, he invited her to go on holiday with him over the weekend, to which she agreed with good grace. He glowed with excitement and told her that she graced his life. They had a good time and came back with glows on their faces. But after they came back, she told everything to her friend, who happened to be a reporter. The next day, their story appeared on the front page with the title, The Tale of Glue. The public was shocked and said they didn't want such a man to govern their state. After the wife read the story, she just said, "My goodness," and fainted. When her husband came home, she hit him with a golf club. Everybody smiled as the poor man walked into his office with a Band-Aid glued to his forehead. He grabbed at his female assistant's hand and asked her not to destroy his career, but she loosened his grab and went away. Not long ago, she told a TV reporter that she was doing graduate studies in politics and wanted to be at the top one day.
Grain to grind. It was 4 a.m., and young Charlie was already up milking the cows. He fed the horse some grain, and the horse rubbed its head on his shoulder in gratitude. He then went into the greenhouse to water the plants. After breakfast, he ground up some coffee, packed his grammar book in his bag, and went on the school bus. Charlie worked very hard at school and had a good grasp of what his teachers said. He was granted the title Model Student. That day, he learned gravity. The teacher drew a graph on the board to help them grasp the idea. They also learned how to measure things in grams. In the English class, they were asked to write a story about the rabbit and the greedy fox. Charlie was tired and sleepy and couldn't think of what to say, but he ground out a story just before the class finished. Charlie was grateful when the school day finished. On his way home, he enjoyed the grand view of the country and stopped to pick some grapes. When he approached the graveyard, he was frightened and quickly ran away. The daily grind on the farm had made Charlie's father a grave person. He took it for granted that children needed work and discipline. Charlie wished he could get a grant and escape to the big city to study.
Grip to gymnasium. The grocer complained to the police that things were missing from his store and said that each day he lost goods to the gross value of $50, which equaled the daily profit he grossed. The police made a guarantee that they would catch the thief. They stayed near the store all day for 3 days, but didn't find anyone who looked guilty. Meanwhile, however, the store owner reported no growth in profits. As the police had guaranteed to solve the problem, they had to get to grips with it, so the chief detective went over. The chief detective had attended the Gulf War and was very experienced. When he arrived, a man carrying a guitar box gripped his attention. The man was busking near the store, and the detective went over to talk to him. The guy was a bit nervous and chewed his gum hard. The detective noticed that the man was gripping a whistle, so he managed to get the whistle out of the man's grip and blew it. A monkey appeared and was carrying something taken from the store. The detective took the man and the monkey back to the police station. Following the man's guidance, they found most of the stolen goods on the roof of the gymnasium. The man and his monkey had made the gym their own storehouse. They now include this case in the guidelines of the police manual.
Halt to harm. Shirley went into the cafe and sat down at the bar. She ordered ham and eggs, paid the bill, and put her handbag on the next stool. After she returned to home, she realized that she had taken the wrong bag. She checked the bag and found a handful of coins and a matchbox with a telephone number and some strange handwriting on it. She tried to hammer out a solution. Just then, she heard someone hammering at her door. She halted before reaching for the handle. It was her neighbor, who wanted to borrow a hammer. She dialed the number written on the matchbox, and a man answered the phone. When she told the man what had happened, there was a halt at the other end of the phone. When the man asked her to take the bag to a boat in the harbor, the minute Shirley arrived, 3 men jumped at her and bound her with a rope. The men took the bag and went away. Shirley forced herself to become hardened and try to think out a way to handle the situation, because she didn't want to be harmed. She looked around and found some hardware on a table nearby. That's handy, she thought, and managed to move herself near the table. She started to cut the rope with the tool. It was a hardship, but she hammered away at it. Finally, she freed herself. She knew the men were still nearby, so she harbored herself in the boat until darkness came. In the end, she escaped and came to no harm.